Welcome. Welcome to today's Millie Arbisfeld's and Dresher Yom Rishon. My name is Karen Simon, and I work for Yeshiva University Center for the Jewish Future. If you're attending for the first time, or your contact information has changed, or you're no longer receiving the emails, possibly your email address has changed, please fill out one of the blue cards and hand it to me. If you're interested in sponsoring a session of Kol El and or Midrashat Yom Rishon, you can reserve a week or more of learning. You can fill out this information on the website, or you can speak to me. Sponsoring a day of learning is a wonderful way to celebrate a simcha or commemorate a yahrzeit. Please join us next week. For those who I told we're not having it next week, we are. On Sunday, September 28th, we'll be featuring Shirim from Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter and Ms. Miriam Brand. Recordings of today's Shirim will be available shortly on the Marcos Nadina Katz YU Torah website, along with Shirim from previous weeks. If you haven't checked out the website, it is brand new, just redone, and it's beautiful. So please check it out. Please turn off your cell phones until the end of the program. Okay. The date of next week, whatever the date of next week is, there's a shiur next week. Okay. October 5th. Okay, thank you. If you need to exit the room during the program, please do so quietly, or the door not close loudly behind you. If you cannot hear the speaker, please kindly raise your hand to let them know. Today's first shiur will be delivered by Rabbi Kenneth Brander. With a very long bio, we're just going to take two sentences out of it. Rabbi Kenneth Brander is Dean of Yeshiva University Center for the Jewish Future, and he's the Rabbi Emeritus of the Boca Raton Synagogue. Rabbi Brander.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning, everyone. First and foremost, a ksiva v'chsima tova. It should be a happy and healthy year for all of us, for all our families, for Klal Yisrael, for the world community. It's a pleasure to share words of Torah with you this morning. It's a particular pleasure to be able to share those words of Torah in front of my mother. She should continue to have arichas yamin. And I feel like a few members of the 70th Avenue block is here. And this is a way of me repaying for the several forms of destruction that I did on that block over my years of growing up, which included water fights, learning how to park, and using the cars in front of the car and back as bumpers. And this is my form of asking a public mechila. I want to begin by just some words of introduction, and then we'll get into the sources. This is a little bit of an elaboration of something that I just wrote for a newsletter that goes out from the center, and it's about the whole notion of the themes of shofar. We're told by Chazal that there are two paradigms regarding the blowing of the shofar. They are called, tekios demiyushav, and tekios demu'umad. Literally translated, the sitting blast, tekios demiyushav, the sitting blast, and tekios demu'umad, the standing blast. Tekios demiyushav, the sitting blasts, are the blasts that are blown, depending on your minhag, either before the silent personal amida or actually during. Rabbi Soloveitchik preferred that the tekios demiyushav were blown during the silent or during what's called the shtilla shmona esrei. In fact, I remember when I came to Boca Raton, it was pre the art school magzer, it was the Birnbaum magzer, and I figured, hey, there's a new community, 60 families that can incorporate minhagim, and I decided we were going to blow the shofar blast not before the silent shmona esrei, but during. So I got two stamps, one with an asterisk and one with please wait for shofar blowing. And after Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, and the Shtilla Shmona Esrei, I had that asterisk, and And on the bottom it said, please wait for shofar blowing. And in Boca, everybody comes from a different place. It's not that you have one minhag. It's if there are 60 families there, there's easily 100 to 150 minhagim there. And basically, I almost lost the position after trying to make that change. And so we went back to the more prevalent way amongst Ashkenazim, not Hasidim, and that is to blow the Kiyot HaMiyushav, not during the silent Shemoneh Esrei, but beforehand. But the halacha really highlights this idea of Kiyot HaMiyushav and Kiyot HaMa'umad. But you know, even though they're called Tekiyot HaMiyushav, the sitting blasts, as we all know, we don't sit for Tekiyot Shofar. What are the ideas behind these two paradigms or behind these two contexts for these blasts? The blasts that are blown during the public Amidah, during the Chazaras HaShatz, which is known as Tekiyot HaMa'umad, the standing blasts, and the blasts that are either blown during the silent Amidah or, more prevalent, before the silent Amidah. So I believe that each of the shofar blasts represents a different paradigm. Tekiyot HaMiyushav, those blasts that are blown either during or before the personal Amidah, is a call to each and every one of us to engage in the process of tshuva. But these sitting blasts represent the idea that this tshuva process is about us standing as individuals. We may participate in a Rosh Hashanah davening, which has 500 people, 1,000 people, 200 people, but this set of shofar blasts say, sit as an individual, step away from the community, reevaluate each and every one of us, our personal relationship with God. These particular sounds ask us to reflect upon our lives as individuals and to ask the very tough questions. Have I succeeded in creating a personal rendezvous with God? Do I communicate with God? This year, have I grown in my personal relationship with God? What have I done as an individual to get closer to God? Do I know God this year better than I knew God last year? What are my personal relationships like with my spouse, with my parents, with my siblings, with my children and with my grandchildren? In what ways have I triumphed? In what ways have I failed? That's the Tekiyot HaMiyushav. They ask us to sit, to stand aside, not part of a community, but as individuals. You know, David HaMelech conquered all of Eretz Yisrael. He stabilized, or a large part of Eretz Yisrael. He stabilized the Jewish people from enemies, both from within and from without. He wrote Tehillim. He taught the faith community how to communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in his personal life, in his personal relationship with God, he often failed. As a husband, in the way he dealt with his wife, the promises he made regarding Shlomo HaMelech becoming king, his intentions were not known. There was a rebellion within the family because of that. As a father, his silence when Amnon, his son, raped his daughter Tamar. And as a mensch, when he takes Bathsheba to be his wife. And when David HaMelech is confronted with these personal mistakes by Nasan, the prophet, David says, Vayomer David al Nasan and Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer David al Nasan, and David says to Nasan, Chatasi la Hashem, I've sinned to God. Vayomer Nasan al David, and Nasan says to David, Gam Hashem hevir chataskha lo tamut, God will forgive you for your sin. But this is one of the most interesting verses in all of Tanakh. Because this verse in Tanakh is one of the only verses where the Masorah has a space imposed within the verse. Go home today when you have some time, or perhaps on Rosh Hashanah when you have some time. I know it's an oxymoron, Erev Rosh Hashanah, to have some time. And that's why my mother came. She wanted to make sure at least one person was here this morning. But the idea is that if you go and look at a Tanakh, again, Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel, you'll notice, depending on your Tanakh, either a samach in middle of the Pasuk or empty space, like a pregnant pause in the text of the verse. It's the only time that you find a space, a Masoretic space, imposed within the verse itself. Normally, you have a samach or a pei at the end of a section of verses, but here in the verse itself, And the Vilna Gaon explains, what is this pregnant pause within the Pasuk? It is the idea that when David says to Nasan, Chatasi LaHashem, I've sinned to God, there's a samach there, empty space, because it represents the cries of David HaMelech. Cries that cannot be shackled or described by words. When David HaMelech realizes his failure in his individual relationship with other people, and therefore his individual relationship with God. And the crying sound is the shofar blast. The tekiyot demiyushav, those sitting blasts, ask the individual to reflect, and I would say even to deconstruct, our personal relationships. And to ask ourselves the most important questions in our relationships with the people that are important within our lives. Where have I succeeded and where must I change? And that's the first set of blasts. Chazal say, blow those blasts during the silent Amida when we stand as individuals. And then they say there's another set of blasts, Tekiyot Me'umad. These shofar blasts are blown during the communal Amida, as we stand together as a community. And it requires us to ask in all candor, has the community that I live in lived up to its responsibilities? What role have I played to empower the community to serve as a spiritual haven and heaven to its constituents? The answers are not the same. The answer in my personal development in my Avodas Hashem may be in my personal relationships. It may be finding time to learn and grow as an individual. But I also must be part of a larger community. As Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to tell us, Judaism does not believe in Jews living a Robinson Crusoe lifestyle. It's not just about engaging in our own personal growth. As a community, we have to create a climate that encourages the local observance of mitzvot. As a community, we have to allow for a spiritual journey for all by ensuring various portals of entry. Whether it is in our support for Israel, whether it is in our support for local issues, whether it is in our support for hunger, whether it is in dealing with hunger, whether it is in dealing with issues like Darfur, it is our responsibility as a community to ask ourselves the most important questions. In those tekiyot me'umad, what have we done as a community? There's an interesting personality in Tanakh who has a very special personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It says, V'hishkin baboker, that Eov got up every single morning, V'hela olot mispar kulam, and he brought sacrifices for his family and for himself. Ki amar Eov, because Eov said, Ulai chatu banai, maybe my children sinned, maybe my children made a mistake in their personal relationship to God. But the tragedy of Eov is that while the personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is critical, it is worthless if it is not integrated in being part of the community. Our personal relationship with God must be used to strengthen ourselves and for us to be a creative force within the community structure. And therefore, Rabbi Soloveitchik explains that at the end of Eov, Eov is only returned to his original stature when Vahashem Shav et Shavut Eov, Eov is returned to his original stature, Bispalalu Ba'ad Re'ehu, when he realizes it's not enough just to pray for himself and his family, but to pray for the community. And so we begin our conversation today with just understanding the context of Tkiyat Shofar, that there are two paradigms, Tkiyot Demiyushav, those sitting blasts that ask us, how have we grown as individuals? And again, I dare say that's not about what we do to contribute to the community. It's about what we do to make sure that we have time for ourselves to grow as human beings. We're worthless to the community if we do not re-energize ourselves and empower ourselves. And the recognition that one cannot just be worried about empowering ourselves and not being part of a larger Jewish, and I would say also a larger global community. It's interesting that in smack in the tractate of Shabbat, and I believe I've mentioned this once before, are the laws of Chanukah. They're not found in the tractate of Megillah, which makes sense because Hanukkah is a rabbinic holiday, and so is Purim. It's found in the tractate of Shabbat. And the reason for that is because Shabbat speaks about the personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's about not walking in the public thoroughfare of life. It's about not carrying things within the public arena of life. That's what Shabbat is about. The epicenter of the Shabbat experience is in the home. And Hanukkah, the epicenter of the Hanukkah experience, is lighting lights to change community. It's about making sure we light the Chanukiah in a place where everyone sees. The mitzvah of lighting the Chanukiah is at a point in time, at Shetichla Regel Menashuk, as long as there's traffic in the public thoroughfare. And the juxtaposition of Shabbos and Hanukkah is the true energy of the Jew. The responsibility for us to create the energy of Shabbos, to grow as individuals, to grow as families, and at the same time, the responsibility for us to understand the energy of Hanukkah, our responsibility to community. And it is that synergy, that porous membrane between the two, that is the celebration of why Chazal decided the laws of Hanukkah will not be put in the rabbinic tractate of Purim, but put in the tractate dealing with Shabbat, because it is that synergy between them. And I believe that's the message also of Tkiyat Shofar. Two contexts to represent two ideas, the idea of the personal development, the idea of the communal development, and the handshake that there must be between those two contexts. With this as a backdrop, let us go into the meat and potatoes of our conversation today. And with that, we begin our sources. During the time of the Shoftim, for approximately 20 years, the Jewish people were subjected to the tyranny of the Canaanite nation. When Devorah assumes the leadership role as the judge, as the prophetess over the Jewish people, her first matter of business is to put an end to the Canaanite persecution of the Jewish people. And the person feared the most out of anyone is the ruthless general of the Canaanite nation, whose name is Sisera. Devorah, with the help of Barak, launches a crushing attack against the nation of Canaan, and General Sisera flees the battlefield in horror, only to be seduced and killed by Yael. That's the context. Sisera, the major general out for the destruction of the Jewish people. Let's look at source number one of our handout. Ba'ad ha'chalon, nishkafa. What happens is the mother of Sisera is informed that the mighty Canaanite nation is returning. And she runs out to the palace window. Ba'ad ha'chalon, nishkafa. She looks out of the window. Vatiya bev. She's waiting anxiously for her yingle, for her son Sisera, to return from the war. And the mother of Sisera moans through the lattice. Ba'ad hashgav. Madua boshet rechbo lavo. Why is he coming back so late? Some of the people are coming back, some of the soldiers, but the general, Sisera, why does he tarry? Madua boshet rechbo lavo. Madua echaru pamei magrubasav. Why am I not hearing the wheels of his chariots, the noise of his chariots? And the verse continues. This is in Shira Devorah, in Shirat Devorah. Chachamot siroteha ta'anena. The wisest of her princesses, the wisest of the princesses of the mother of Sisera, answer her in the following way. Afhi tashiv amrela. What is the answer? Next pasuk. Halo yimsu yalchaku shalal. Don't you realize that your son has found a whole bunch of spoils? He's destroyed the Jewish people. And he has all this booty to give out. Racham rechamatayim l'rosh gaver. He has all of these women to give out as spoils. One or two women at least for each soldier of his army. Shalal tzvaim l'sisra, shalal tzvaim rikma, sheva rikmatayim l'tzavarei shalal. Don't worry, don't moan, don't cry. He has all of the richness of this, of these clothing, of these dyed garments, these wonderful tapestries of the Jewish people. And he's handing them out to all of his soldiers. He's giving them out. You know why he's late? He has a lot to do. He's captured so much. He has so much to give out. All these captured Jewish women and all these captured Jewish riches to give out. That's why he's delayed. That's the context. Let's look at the Gemara, the next source. The Gemara says to us the following. Seder tkiot. How many shofar blasts do we really have to blow? Shalosh shel shalosh. You have to blow three sets of three sounds. In other words, you only have to blow tkiya teruah tkiya. You have to blow it three times after malchiot, zichronot, and shofarot. The rabbi said, we're going to create two sets of shofar blasts, like we just discussed. The sitting blast, tekiot demiyushav, tekiot demeumad. So we move from 9 to 18. We have a lot more than 18 shofar blasts. A lot more than that. So the Gemara starts to try to analyze this. The Gemara, based on the Mishnah, which we did not read yet, would have underlined, shir tekiya kishlosh truot. The tekiya, again, let me just preface this, and that is, you have a tekiya, which is the complete blast, then you have a broken blast, and then you have a tekiya, a complete blast. Every broken blast is bracketed by complete blast on each side. So the Gemara says that tekiya needs to be a certain length. If it's not that length, it will be considered a broken blast and not a complete blast. Shir tekiya kishlosh truot. The tekiya needs to be at least the amount of three truot, of three of the broken glass. So the Gemara asks the following question. The Gemara says, each truah has to be as long as the three broken glass. But we have another Gemara, or a Braita, another rabbinic source that says the truah does not have to be the sound of three. The tekiya doesn't have to be the sound of three truot, but is of three shvarim. Again, I'm sure most of you are aware of this, but just let me review, at least for my sake, the difference between the truah and shvarim. The truah is the very short blast. You know, those the toot, 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 toot. The shvarim is those three long blasts. Three long broken blasts. Toot, toot, toot. Three long blasts. Now you know why I never daven for the Amud on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Only time I'm allowed to daven for the Amud is on Tisha B'Av. Anyways, so the idea is that there is the Truah and before Chatzos. Truah and the Shvarim. And that is, Truah are those very short blasts and Shvarim is those three broken blasts. So the Gemara says, how long does the long blast, the tekiyas, need to be? The amount of the truah and the amount of the amount of the shvarim. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that there's a machlokas of what the broken blast really needs to be. Is the broken blast nine fast blasts? Toot, 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 toot. Or is it three like moans? Toot, toot, toot. And the Gemara says we don't really have an answer to that. So what happens? We're not sure what to do. So all of a sudden, those nine grows exponentially because you need a tekiya and a broken blast. Well, we're not sure if the broken blast is a shvarim. We're not sure if it's those three blasts or teruah, those nine fast blasts. And maybe it's a mixture of both. So we blow tekiya, shvarim, tekiya. We blow tekiya, teruah, tekiya. And we blow tekiya, shvarim, teruah, tekiya. All because we're not sure about that middle broken blast. That's where that all comes from. So basically, all of a sudden, your nine basically grows exponentially because every time you blow a blast, you really have to blow three sets. because you're not exactly sure what that middle blast is all about. Where does this all come from? Where is this source about the need to blow broken blasts on Rosh Hashanah? Says the Gemara, Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Baha Vade Pligi, this is the argument, Diksiv Yom Trua Yelachem, it says it's that Rosh Hashanah is the day of the broken blast, Umit Targuminan, and Targum Onkelis translates the word Terua, broken blast, as Yivava, as some type of moan. Yom Yivava Yehe Lachon. And what does the word Yivava mean? Well, we only, says the Gemara, Yivava is translated based on the experience of Sisra's mother. Uktiv ba'amei de Sisra, it is written regarding the mother of Sisra, ba'ad ha'chalom nishkafa v'atiyah bev, aim Sisra, that Sisra's mother cried, waiting for her yingle, the general of this Canaanite nation. Mar savar genuche ganach, one felt that when she cried, she had protracted groans, which is the shvarim, toot, toot, toot. And the other one says, Mar savar yulule yalil, that she had short wails, the trua, those nine short blasts. And because of the fact that we must mimic on Rosh Hashanah, the holiest day of the year, the mother of Sisra, and we're not sure how Sisra cried waiting for her son, we blow all the permutations, the groans and the moans together, and the groans and the moans separate. Shvarim Trua, Shvarim and Trua. This is the Gemara that is the cornerstone of our blowing the shofar. We couldn't have found a better role model than Sisra's mother. As Rabbi Schachter says when we have these conversations, the mother of Osama bin Laden is the paradigm for Rosh Hashanah. The mother of Arafat is the paradigm. The mother of the president of Iran is the paradigm for the blowing of the shofar. The mother of Hitler is the paradigm of the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. I don't know, Rachel Mevakal Baneha. Rachel cries. Why don't we use Rachel? But the Gemara clearly states here that what we use is, we use the mother of Sisra. The mother of Sisra. We all run to shul. We all twist ourselves in a pretzel to make sure we hear the tekiahs, because we have to remember, as the Talmud says, the cries of the mother of Sisra. In fact, we're not sure how she cried. So we're going to blow the shofar not just as a shvarim, and not just as a trua, but as a shvarim trua. And not just in one of the paradigms of tekiahs d'me'umad, but also in tekiahs d'me'yushav. And in fact, just in case that wasn't bad enough, because the Talmud only requires, even with that, you don't get the 100 sounds of the shofar, says Tosafot, if you look at the fifth source on the page where it says Tosafot, that, you know why there are 100 blasts, says Tosafos? You know why there are 100 blasts on Rosh Hashanah? Keneged mea pe'yos depayad ema de Sisra. Because we are told in the Midrash that Sisra's mother cried 100 cries. So everything is based on the mother of this person whose entire purpose in life was to destroy the Jewish people. Who was delayed because, not because his mother knew he was killed, was delayed because he was splitting up the women of Israel to the soldiers, splitting up the clothing of the Jewish people to the soldiers of Israel. And this is what we remember on the day of Rosh Hashanah. And so there are two answers. One answer is an answer that you'll find, Ms. Bravo, in the bottom of many machzorim, some that have the courage to deal with this. And then there is a much better answer that's given by Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I'll share with you both of them. The first answer is the following, and it's a nice answer, I wouldn't even say it here. Despite the lack of morality and the atrocities that Sisera perpetrates, he still has a parent, his mother. And his mother cries on his behalf. And the reason why we remember Sisera's mother and Rosh Hashanah is that we turn to God, our Father, and we say, you know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are not as bad as Sisera. But God, learn from Sisera's mother. Despite Sisera's many failings, she cries for him. And despite our great many failures, continue to cry on our behalf. God, realize you are not just Malkeinu, you are first and foremost Avinu. You are Av Harachaman. And God, look at Sisera's mother. There's something to learn from Sisera's mother. And do the same thing. Respond the way Sisera's mother does. And make sure that you are also engaged in crying on our behalf. That's one answer. That was not the answer that Rabbi Soloveitchik was comfortable with. And when someone gave that answer in Shir, he had choice words to say about it, which I will not repeat. But he gives a totally different answer. And in order for us to understand his answer, we need to just get a little bit more background and some ideas of Kabbalah. Not highfalutin ideas, just some simple ideas. And they're based on several psukim. We're just going to point to one, source number 6, the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Sos asis v'Hashem. This is, I am joyful in my relationship with God, source number 6. Tagel nafshi be'elokai, because my soul is joyful in my relationship with God. Ki hilbushani Big Deyesha Mi'ilts Dakaya Atani. Because God cloaks me in robes of righteousness and in garments of salvation, or cloaks of salvation. Kechatan Yechahen Pe'er Uchechala Tadeh Kaleha. No different than the beautiful garments of a bride and groom on their wedding day. Rabbi Soloveitchik explains here, this pasuk introduces an idea that the Kabbalists take major liftoff from. And that is, in Judaism, there's two forms of clothing. There is what we call the physical clothing. That clothing covers our physical nakedness. That clothing sometimes defines who we are and what we're doing, right? We won't go to a shul dinner wearing jeans and a t-shirt. And Miss Bradley, we won't play golf in a tuxedo. Although in Boca, that does happen. So the bottom line is that clothing sometimes defines who we are. Sometimes that defines who we are. But there's another form of clothing that is being highlighted by the prophet in this pasuk. And that is the notion of spiritual clothing. The notion of Bigdei Yesha and Me'il Tzedakah, the robes of righteousness and the cloaks of salvation. It is the clothing of the soul. And unlike the physical clothing, which we can purchase in a department store, the clothing of the soul are woven from the threads of our actions, our interactions with God, our interactions with our family, our interactions with community and society. In fact, if you look at the Kabbalists, when they speak about the clothing of Yosef, they speak about that physical, spiritual dimension of clothing. When they speak about the Big Day Kahuna, especially on Yom Kippur, they speak about physical and spiritual clothing. There is this idea that there is a notion in Yahadus that the soul also needs clothing. But the clothing of the soul comes from our activities. It comes from our actions. It comes from what we do. Every single morning, when men put on a talit, they sometimes recite the following statement, the final source on the first page of the handout. Hareini mesatef gufi b'tzitzit. I'm about to wrap myself with the talit, my body with the tzitzit. Kain tisatef nishmati, v'ramach evarai v'shagidai, b'or hatzadi atzitzit, ha'ole tayag, ma'briut. So should my soul be wrapped in the spiritual garment, the light of the tzitzit, u'kishem sha'ani mitkaseh b'talit ba'olam hazeh, and as I wrap myself with this physical talit, kach ezke l'chalukha d'rabanan u'talit na'eh, le'olam haba began Eden. So should I be zocha to wear the beautiful spiritual garment in the world to come. There is this idea of spiritual clothing and physical clothing. Turn to the next page of our handout. When Adam and Chava eat from the tree, from the fruit in which they are forbidden to eat, we're told, initially, before they eat from the tree, they are naked, but they are not embarrassed. But after they eat from the tree, look at the source that I have underlined. The eyes of both of them were opened. They realized that they were naked. And they created for themselves physical clothing sewn from fig leaves. Vayasu lahem chagurot. And they made themselves clothing, physical clothing. But then God looks for them. And God says, where are you? Look at Pasuk Yud. Vayomer, and they respond to him, El kolacha shamati, we heard your God, we heard you. Ve'ira, and we were afraid. Ki erom onochi, because we were naked. What type of nakedness did they have? I thought they just dressed themselves with clothing. Ve'echabe, and we hid. And then it says, Vayas ad Hashem Elokim la'adam u'ishto. And God made for Adam and Chava kutonot or. Clothing of or. Clothing of what? Leather. Or with an ayin. By Yalvishem. And they wore them. Look at the Zohar underneath here. Taninan Baraza Damasnisan. We learn in the Mishnah, my diktiv, what does it mean? Vayedu ki erumim hein, they knew they were naked. Hein yidi'ah, yidi'ei mamish, tahahu levusha diakar. Initially, they were wearing garb of majesty, spiritual garb, spiritual clothing. Di'itabid minhon yomein gara minayhu, and those clothing, when they sinned, that spiritual clothing was removed from them. That spiritual clothing became tattered. Velo eshta'er yomam inun litvashabe. And there was no possibility for them wearing this spiritual clothing anymore. What was the nakedness that they felt? It wasn't a physical nakedness. It was a spiritual nakedness. They no longer had their spiritual clothing. And look at this beautiful midrash that Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out to us. Vayas ad Hashem Elokim la'adam u'ishto kutonot or. What does it mean that God created for them leather clothing? I mean, they already had a set of clothing. They didn't need another set. Vayalbishem, and he dressed them, says the midrash, b'torato shel Rabbi Meir. In the Torah scroll of Rabbi Meir, that word is spelled differently. It is not spelled with an ayin that God made kutonot or clothing of leather. Matzu katuv kutonot or clothing of light. That God created for them clothing of light. In the Torah scroll of Rabbi Meir, that ayin is not an ayin. That ayin is an aleph. That God created for Adam and Chava these unbelievable clothing of light. Now just for a moment, let's just put ourselves in a different place. It's the end of the second commonwealth of the Jewish people. The Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed. and the Jewish people are in a tattered state, both physically and spiritually. Rabbi Meir has two teachers, one whose name is Rabbi Akiva, and one whose name is Elisha ben Avuya, otherwise known as Acher. Let's talk about the clothing of Rabbi Meir's teachers, Rabbi Akiva and Elisha ben Avuya. Let's talk about their clothing. Remember, this is a statement made by Rabbi Meir. He's speaking about spiritual clothing. Rabbi Meir has two teachers. Elisha ben Avuya, how does he leave this world? What does his physical clothing look like? What does his kutonot or with an ayin, his physical clothing look like? Elisha ben Avuya, who rebels against the Jewish people, who sells the Jewish people out, he dies on a warm bed, protected, financed by the Empire of Rome. He sleeps every night of his life, of his final days, very comfortably. He's covered, protected from the cold and from the hunger of the Jewish people. He has fine robes and fine linen and fine clothing. But for a moment, let's just ask ourselves about the kutonot or, the clothing of light, or with an aleph, of Elisha ben Avuya. He is acher, he is the other. His Torah is removed from the Mesorah of the Jewish people. And when he is placed in a grave, his grave is no longer known. He is dark and lonely. And as he enters the next world, he enters completely naked. He has no big day yesha. He has no me'il tzedakah. He has no kutnot or. He has no clothing of light. Now let's look at Rabbi Meir's other teacher, Rabbi Akiva. How does he spend his last days? And when Rabbi Soloveitchik explained this, you felt like Elisha ben Avuya and Rabbi Akiva were actually in the room with you. Rabbi Akiva, he's on the run. He's wanted by the strongest government of that time, by the Roman Empire. Every night, he needs to sleep in a different cold basement. Every night, he sleeps with one eye open, lest he be found. And how does he die? Not on a comfortable bed, not warm. He dies persecuted. His skin is flayed. He dies without any physical skin. He dies totally naked. But for one moment, let us look at Rabbi Akiva's kutonot or with an aleph, his clothing of light. Has anyone not heard of Rabbi Akiva? Has anyone not studied his Torah? They even named a youth movement after him. He is the icon. He is the model about what it is to live and sometimes tragically to sacrifice on behalf of guaranteeing the eternality and the immortality of the Jewish people. He has beautiful, regal, wonderful big day yesha and me'il tzedakah. He has beautiful clothing of light. Beautiful kutunot or. The Rambam tells us in Hilchot Tshuvah, Perek Gimel Halacha Dalet, Af al pi shetkiat shofar. I didn't have it there. I just decided to insert that this morning. Af al pi shetkiat shofar barosh Hashanah gzeret hakatuv. Even though shofar blast is a gzeret hakatuv, it is told to us in the Torah you have to do it. Says the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, which is, this is not his way. Remez yeshbo, there is still a reason for it. Kolomar uru yishenim yishinaschem. God is asking us that the shofar should wake us up to evaluate how we use our lives to make sure that our lives are purposeful, that our lives are meaningful, that we are creating spiritual clothing for ourselves. That are we creating spiritual clothing for our communities? That we're evaluating our personal rendezvous with God in the
Kiyot Miyushav in those sitting blasts, and asking ourselves if we're playing the role in the greater community in the Kiyot Ma'umad. And we're evaluating where our spiritual clothing has a few holes that need to be sewn, where they're a little tight and they don't exactly fit the way they should, where exactly they need to be hemmed and they need to be taken out, our spiritual clothing that represent our communal and personal development. Sisera's mother is waiting for her son to return. She looks out of the window, says Rabbi Soloveitchik. If you look at the text, you'll notice it mentions twice that she's looking out of the window. Because the window that she's looking out of is not the window to the street. It's the window of her heart. And she realizes that her mighty son may come back with all the spoils in the world. He may come back with warm clothing and women in captivity. But she realizes for the first time that her son is naked. He has no spiritual clothing. And she begins to cry. Batiyabev Aim Sisera. The mother of Sisera begins to cry because she realizes that her son, as great as he of a personality as he is in the eyes of his nation, may have everything physically of beauty, but has not one pair of spiritual clothing, not one set of spiritual clothing. And when Chazal needed to find a model to represent the sounds of the shofar, it picks the mother of Sisera. Because after all, Rosh Hashanah is a time of joy, but a time of reflection and introspection. And it asks of us to evaluate the state of our spiritual clothing. Which parts are tattered? Which parts need mending? Which parts we have succeeded in developing? And it asks of us to gather our threads, the threads which are defined through a life of purposefulness and meaning, created through our interactions as individuals and as members of a community. Because ultimately, the purpose of Tkiat Shofar is to create our own Bigdei Yesha and Me'il Tzedaka, is to create our own robes of righteousness and garments of salvation. It's about creating our own set of spiritual clothing. It's about creating a set of clothing that is eternal, that is immortal, that lasts for all times. And that's why Chazal decided that the best role model for Tkiyat Shofar, both Tkiyot Miyushav and Tkiyot Ma'umad, representing the different paradigms of our life, is the paradigmatic personality of Sisera's mother. Because what she goes through is what we need to go through. And that is evaluating the worth of our spiritual clothing and doing what we need to do to create beautiful clothing that guarantees that our lives have purpose and meaning, and that guarantees that we contribute to the Nitzchias of Klal Yisrael and its work in the world. And that we recognize that truly this is the mission and the mandate of the theme of what Rosh Hashanah is all about. Have a meaningful Rosh Hashanah and a ketiva v'chatima tova. Thank you very much. Any questions? Comments? Criticisms? Yes, please. What? Why do we stand? So the Gemara has the Rishonim. There are a few Rishonim that discuss that, why we stand. Some say you don't have to stand, but you know what? If I sat during the Kiyos to Miyushav and threw out the Magen Avraham or others that said you don't have to stand, so everyone would say to me, you know, oh, look at this guy, he's an oizvuf, he's not even standing for Tkiyah Shofar. However, I just want to make it clear that obviously somebody who has difficulty standing doesn't have to stand for either sets of Tkiyot. The most important thing is to hear the blasts and not to compromise one's health by standing in any way, shape, or form. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. There is discussion about Rachel Imenu. Rachel's cries are a totally different set of cries. Her cries represent purpose and meaning, and that's why Rachel is discussed within the context of various things that we read and various things that are mentioned throughout the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, because Rachel is also a paradigm. She's not the paradigm of the spiritual clothing. She's a woman who cries to guarantee the Nitzchias of Klal Yisrael, but it's a different paradigm. Yes, yes. Well, mothers, the question was, why was the mother concerned about this? Because the lack of spirituality comes, I guess, from the environment, the sister's upbringing and things of that nature. Is that the question? So the answer in a very technical way is that parents always are concerned about, you know, have they done a good job raising their children? That's a very healthy thing for parents to do, that reflection and introspection. And there's nothing wrong with sister's mother doing what she has to do to evaluate that. She realizes that obviously she made a colossal mistake, and that's why she looks through the lattice. The lattice is a representative, as it is throughout Shir HaShirim, as a time of a point of reflection and introspection, of looking in a hidden way to the hiddenness of her own failures with her son. Yes. Yes. 100%. What I said today was not my Torah, except the Kiyum Yushav Kiyum Ma'uma. The rest is Rabbi Soloveitchik. So I was just a poor somebody who's trying to imitate his comments, but hopefully I communicate the message. Yes. Right. Right, so he has this whole conversation about that, yes?
Yes, so the Yabed is an animal, or someone that has, you know, it's not a thing, and as mentioned, they thought that because of the reason,
right.
But the Yabed is something that comes like...
emotional, intuitive, it's emotional, it's pure emotional.
Right,
right. So it's the same? Right. Okay. Actually, both. He discusses both. That you need both. He needs. Okay. Sivuk Simatova again.